have this all figured out. Tonight, Lord willing, we'll be covering chapters 47 through 50 of Genesis. And then, Lord willing, Sunday, Brent will be doing a review of the book of Genesis for us. There we go. Okay, we have quite a bit to cover tonight. I wanted to start off with a little bit of review about how Jacob got to Egypt. First of all, God told Abram that his descendants would go to a land where they would be servants and they would be there for 400 years. And we read that in Genesis 15 and verse 13. Then he, God, said to Abram, "Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs and will serve them and they will afflict them for 400 years. Then we remember how Joseph was sold into Egypt. Joseph would have been Abram's great-grandson, right? Right. Great-grandson. And you know how his brothers hated him. They were jealous of him. How Jacob was showed quite a bit of favoritism toward him. And in their anger, they sold him into Egypt. And we read about that in Genesis chapter 37. Also in Genesis chapter 37, we see how he was sold to Potiphar in Egypt, who was the captain of the guard. And it started off being pretty good, at least after a while, because Potiphar saw that he was being blessed because of Joseph. But then Potiphar's wife cast longing eyes on him. He resisted, but she told a lie about him, and so she got him thrown into prison. And we see that in Genesis 39 and in verse 20. It says, "And then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison." And that's important about the where the king's prisoners were confined, because we also read about the butler and the baker in Genesis chapter 40. And they were thrown into the prison by Pharaoh. They were Pharaoh's butler and baker. The butler and the baker both had a dream on the same night. Different dreams, but they each had a dream that same night. The butler's dream was about a vine that had three branches that blossomed, and then grapes grew on it, and he reached for the grapes, and he squeezed the grapes into a cup, and he handed it to Pharaoh. Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Now within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your place. And you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former manner when you were his butler. But remember me when it is well with you, and remember please show kindness to me, make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I have done nothing here that they should put me into this dungeon." So at this point, Joseph thinks maybe he has an out, but not immediately, because the butler forgets him for 2 years. And Pharaoh has a couple of dreams, and we remember those dreams, the ones about the fat cows and the gaunt cows, and the fat ears of corn and the ears, or fat ears of grain and the ears of grain that were blasted with the east wind. The butler remembers Joseph, because Pharaoh couldn't find anybody to interpret his dream. The butler told Pharaoh about Joseph, and he sent for him immediately then. Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, and we remember those dreams being about the 7 years of plenty and then the 7 years of famine. And because he interpreted those dreams, Pharaoh made him head over Egypt, and we read that in 41:41. Pharaoh said to him, "See, I've set you over all the land of Egypt." So quite a lot happens to Joseph, right? Well, the famine was severe in the land, not only in Egypt, but also in Canaan. And we know how Jacob sent his sons to go buy food in Canaan. And Joseph told his brothers eventually, "For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting." So this is 2 years into the famine. Joseph would have been about 39 at the time. 22 years he'd already been in Egypt. And he says, go after our father. Bring him back. Bring back your family. Bring back your animals that you have here, and I'll provide for you. I'll make sure that you have what you need. Okay. Any questions or comments about this part? Jacob and his family do move. They get into the land of Goshen. And before they all that goes on, Joseph tells his brothers, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me here before you to preserve life. Again, because there's 5 more years of famine, and he's preserving their lives. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Well, we'll talk about it a little bit more now. God keeps his promises. We've talked about this several times during the quarter, how God keeps his promises, maybe not on the timetable that we think of, but on his own timetable. And really, I want us to think about how long it took for those promises to start being fulfilled. In Genesis chapter 12, when Abram left the land of Haran, he was 75 years old. In Genesis chapter 16, when Abram married, was with Hagar, because Sarah gave her to him, he was 85 years old, because the verse says 10 years after he'd gotten into the land. We go back to Genesis chapter 15 then, which is in between those two ages of 75 and 85. That is when God told Abram that his descendants would go into a land where they would be servants and they would be there for 400 years. So somewhere between the time of 75 and 85, and it looks like closer to 85, was when God told Abram that his descendants would go into this land. So he was 85 years or younger when God told him about Egypt, though he didn't call out Egypt by name there. It was 183 years from the time God told Abram about Egypt till Joseph came to Egypt. How do we know that? Again, Abram was 85 or younger when God told him about his descendants. Abram was 100 years old when Isaac was born, so that's 15 years later. Isaac was 60 when Jacob was born, so that's 75 years after God told Abram. Jacob was 91 when Joseph was born, so that's 166 years after God told Abram about his descendants. And then Joseph was 17 when he came to Egypt, so that's 183 years. 183 years to be thinking about, God said your descendants will be going into a land where they will be servants for 400 years. Well, that's longer than most of us think about. It was 205 years from the time God talked to Abraham and told him about his descendants going into Egypt till the time that Jacob actually made it into there. And I'm not going to read the chart again, but you can see what's on the chart and you can see the numbers there, how they line up, 205 years. That's a long time to wait for a promise to come true. But God keeps his promises in his own timetable. Now, the 400 years that God mentions to Abraham, or the 430 years that we see in Exodus chapter 12 and verse 40 in, when did those years begin? Was it when Joseph came to Egypt? Was it when Jacob came to Egypt? I don't know the answer to that. I would love to know more about that, and if you have better answers than I do, I would love to hear them. But I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to be like Brent. What he said the other day about the number of Jacob's descendants that came into the land of Egypt, whether you take from some verses about the 66 or the 70 or the 75, I believe that it is all true, the 430 or the 400 years. In the context that they were written, those were the right years. and I believe God's message to be true. Just because I don't understand how they all work doesn't mean that God is not true. It means I lack knowledge. Yes, sir.
You can even throw another scripture in there. Acts chapter 7, verse 6. It says 400 years. So I think those are just quote round numbers, or you say just depending on who they were talking to, they were rounding it off for exactly. But there's another one that says 400 years.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Kraft mentions that in Acts it also mentions the 400 years. Okay. Today's lesson is chapters 47 through 50, and again, Lord willing, Brent will be doing the review on Sunday. Yes, sir, Brent? Okay, good. Brent brings up in Galatians where it says that in the fullness of time, God did, you know, bring Jesus into the world. Okay, thank you. Okay, quite a bit to cover. So in the context tonight, of course, we're going to be talking about God, Joseph and his two sons, Jacob, Pharaoh, and Moses' brothers. We're already in the second year of the famine. Jacob is 130 years old at the beginning of today's lesson, and Joseph is 39. All this is occurring in the land of Egypt, except for a little bit that we talk about that happens in the land of Canaan. So, there's a whole lot. There's several different stories in these four chapters here. Let's just get into them. So, Pharaoh meets Joseph's whole family. Jacob comes to the land of Egypt. He goes into the land of Goshen, and Joseph takes five of his brothers, and he takes his father to meet Pharaoh. And Pharaoh asked his brothers, you know, what's your occupation? And they said, we're shepherds. We have been shepherds from our youth up, and our fathers were shepherds too. We don't have any pasture back in the land of Canaan, and so we wanted to come here and live in the land of Goshen. Pharaoh says to Joseph, your family has come. You give them the best of the land, the best of the lands before you. Let them live in the land of Goshen. And that's what they did. Then Pharaoh met Jacob. And Pharaoh asked Jacob, how old are you? You know, we're kind of a little shy about asking that sometimes nowadays. Pharaoh asked Jacob how old he was. And I love the answer. You know, he said he was 130 years old. But he said, I'm not going to get this completely right, but the years, the days of my pilgrimage do not attain to the years of the pilgrimage of my fathers. Look it up and get it right. But it's a beautiful answer that he gives him. And he's, you know, he was right. Of course, he's going to live another 17 years, but he doesn't live the same amount of years as his father. Isaac lived to be 180, if I remember correctly, and Abram lived to be 175, and Jacob's only going to live only to 147. All right, and then Jacob blessed Pharaoh, and we read in Hebrews 7:7 that the lesser is blessed by the better. And Joseph did take care of all of his family there. He made sure that they all had food. Jacob and his sons and their families, they all had food. This map is just to kind of give you an idea of where the land of Goshen is. It's up in the upper part in the Nile Delta, close to where it runs into the Mediterranean Sea. And even today, if you go there, you'll see that it is a land where there's a lot of fruit being grown there. And it's a productive area of Egypt. The famine was very severe, not only in Egypt, but also in Canaan. And we read before how the people came to Pharaoh to get grain. And he sent them to Joseph, and Joseph opened up the storehouses, and he sold grain to them. And they ran out of money. And so they come to him, and they say, we've got no more money. And he says, you give me your animals, give me your livestock, and I'll give you grain this year. And so they gave him horses and flocks and cattle and donkeys. And Brent and I have got a running joke about the donkeys. But they gave him their animals for bread that year. And it says, thus he fed them with bread in exchange for all their livestock that year. The next year, Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. And it wasn't just the land, he also bought the people. And he moved them into the cities. And he didn't buy the land of the priest because they were given rations by Pharaoh for their food rations. It doesn't say that I'm aware of, but I just take it for granted that the priests that he's talking about there are the priests of On, the sun worshipers, the idol worshipers of the land. Joseph told the people, I have bought you and your land this day for Pharaoh. And he puts basically a 20% tax on them and says, 20% of your harvest is going to go to Pharaoh. The other 80% you get to keep for your own food, for your family's food, and for planting the next year. They, rather than being, you know, disappointed in their situation, seemed to be thankful to Joseph for providing a lifeline to them for a way to have bread, something to eat. And this law stayed in effect up until the time, at least until the time of the writing of the book of Genesis. Because in Genesis chapter 47 and verse 26, it says, and Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt to this day, Moses writes, that Pharaoh should have one-fifth except for the land of the priest only, which did not become Pharaoh's. So that stayed in place for quite a while. Any questions or comments about that? Jacob's family had a lot of possessions in the land, and they were beginning to get pretty numerous. I've often wondered, did the people who had to sell their land and themselves to Pharaoh get jealous because of what Joseph's family had, and they didn't have to sell anything, or at least so, seemingly so. But again, the Bible doesn't say that. It goes back. It seems like they're very thankful that Joseph gave them food to eat. Jacob lives another 17 years in the land of Egypt. And when he gets near death, he has Joseph come to him and he says to Joseph, I don't want to be buried here. I want to be buried with my fathers back in the land of Canaan. I want to be buried in the cave of Machpelah. And we see that particular detail in the next few chapters. And Joseph promised that he would. And he had Joseph to put his hand under his thigh and to swear to him. And you remember when Abraham sent his servant to find a wife for Isaac. Back in Genesis chapter 24, Abraham had his servant put his hand under his thigh. As far as I can remember, these are the only two places where this particular custom occurs. Okay, questions or comments about that? Okay, Joseph blesses Ephraim and Manasseh. Remember, Manasseh is Joseph's oldest son, and Ephraim is his youngest son. Joseph is told that his father is sick. And he goes to Jacob with his two sons, and Jacob says to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz. And remember, Jacob renamed Luz to Bethel. He called it Bethel, house of God, where the ladder was. In the land of Canaan, and blessed me, and said to me, behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make of you a multitude of people and give this land to your descendants after you as an everlasting possession. So he reminds Joseph of the nation promise that was given to him and the land promise that was given to him. And he says, your two sons are going to be just like my sons. So he's given Joseph essentially a double portion here. He's given him the birthright, essentially, by giving him that double portion. Okay. Questions or comments about that? Okay. It says that Israel's eyes were dim with age. And it seems like one of those customs that they had back then was that Joseph took his two children from beside him and he put them up next to Jacob. And he puts the older one Manasseh on Jacob's right side, and he puts the younger one, Ephraim, on Jacob's left-hand side, so that Jacob can bless the older one with his right hand, and he can bless the younger one with his left hand. And he presented them to Israel like that. And Jacob said, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named upon them, just like we talked about in the previous slide. They're going to be just like the rest of his sons. And the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. But Jacob didn't do exactly like Joseph thought he would. Jacob crossed his hands. And he put his right hand on the younger Ephraim, and he put his left hand on the older Manasseh. And Joseph didn't like this, and he tried to get it switched back. And Jacob said, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. Yes, the older one will be a great nation, but the younger one will be greater than he is. And so Jacob blessed them that day, saying, by you Israel will bless, saying, may God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And thus he set Ephraim before Manasseh. And we've talked before about how even during the time of the divided kingdom, that sometimes the northern kingdom was referred to as Ephraim. Every time I read this story, I kind of get the impression, you know, when Joseph is bringing them out from his side and he's presenting them to Jacob, that they're little kids. But at this time, they're 19 years old or older. How do we know that? Well, they were born before the famine started. Okay? 2 years later, Jacob shows up in Egypt. And this is 17 years after that. So they're at least 19 years old. Yes, sir. Very good. Very good. Other questions or comments? Okay. In Genesis chapter 49, Jacob tells his sons their future. And I'm not going to go into all the details here. I'd mess it up if I tried. But I'll hit some of the highlights. And he starts off with his oldest son, Reuben. He says, you're unstable as water. And you're not going to excel because you laid with my wife, Bilhah. And so he essentially is taking away the birthright from Reuben. And we read in 1 Chronicles chapter 5 and in verse 1 where it says, now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, he was indeed the firstborn. But because he defiled his father's bed with Bilhah, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, just like we talked about, Ephraim and Manasseh, the son of Israel, so that the genealogy is not listed according to the birthright. So Reuben had to pay for what he did. Simeon and Levi's anger was fierce according to Jacob. And it made me think about what they did in Genesis chapter 34 when Shechem took Dinah, their sister, and laid with her, and how they went into the city and they killed all the males that were in Shechem. And Jacob was a little bit nervous after that about how the people of the land would react to all this. He said Simeon and Levi would be scattered in Israel. And we see that. It happens a couple of different ways. One to Simeon is that their land was within the land of Judah when the tribe's lands was busted up. And in Joshua 19:9, it says, the inheritance of the children of Simeon was included in the share of the children of Judah, for the share of the children of Judah was too much for them. Therefore, the children of Simeon had their inheritance within the inheritance of that people. And whether this map is exactly right or not, maybe we can get the idea how you see the little blob, hopefully, that is where the land of Simeon was, and all the way around it, you see where the land of Judah was. And so they kind of got mixed in with the land of Judah. We really don't read a lot about the people of Simeon after the land is divided up. But also, the people of Levi were divided up. And I'm sure all of us remember that the Levites were not given a big land mass like the other tribes were. They were given 48 cities, six of which were the cities of refuge. And they had a little bit of land around the cities, but they didn't have these big land masses like the other tribes did. So Jacob's saying about Simeon and Levi comes true. Talking about Judah, Jacob said, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes." Shiloh means peace giver. And in Isaiah chapter 9 and verse 6, "For unto us a child is born." Talking about Jesus. "Unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." So it was through Judah that our Lord came, the Prince of Peace. And as far as Gad is concerned, Jacob said, "A troop shall tramp upon him, but he shall triumph at last." It made me think about what Leah said when Gad was born. She said, "A troop comes." So you see the two things about the troops there. One when he was born and when Jacob is talking about his future. And about Joseph, Jacob said the archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him, and talking about how Joseph's brothers had done him wrong. Okay, any questions or comments about that? Okay, moving on. At the end of chapter 49 and at the beginning of chapter 50, we see where Jacob dies and where he's buried. Right before he dies, he tells his sons, "I don't want to be buried here. I want to be buried in the cave of Machpelah, where Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebekah and Leah are buried. I want you to take me there." And that means that they're going to have to take him back to the land of Canaan. And then he lays down in his bed and he dies. And so that would have been a very emotional moment, I'm sure, for them. And Joseph has the physicians to embalm Jacob, and that takes 40 days. And then the people of Egypt mourn for Jacob for 70 days. I don't know if that's in parallel or one after the other or what. But they mourn for him for 70 days. And then Joseph asked Pharaoh's permission to go and take his father back to the land to have him buried. And Pharaoh permits that. And there was a large contingent from Egypt and from Israel and from Egypt. Even officers from the land of Egypt went up. And the people of Canaan, when they saw all these people, they said, "This is a great mourning for even the Egyptians." And then everybody went back to Egypt. Jacob was 147 when he died. He died 17 years after entering Egypt. He died 12 years after the famine was over. And Joseph would have been 56 when Jacob died. As you might guess, Joseph's brothers get a little nervous. "Dad's gone. What is Joseph going to do to us now? Considering all the bad things that we have done to him in the past." And so they send messengers to Joseph saying, "Our father said, forgive your brothers for the evil that they've done to you." And Jacob said, "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring it about as it is this day to save many people alive." So Joseph got the big picture, and he didn't take vengeance out on them, even though he had a great opportunity to do that. He saw what God had done, and he was the bigger person in this situation. And then finally, Joseph dies in chapter 50. And he got to see his children and his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, several generations that he got to see. And he told the people of Israel, someday God is going to take you up from here, and he's going to take you back to the land that God's promised. Take my bones with you. And at the age of 110, he dies. And he's embalmed and put in a coffin. I think it's Mr. Waldron who made the point that it doesn't seem like the Egyptians made a big to-do about Joseph dying, even though he was this great ruler and, you know, and saved them during the land during the time of the famine. But it doesn't seem like a big to-do was made about it. Maybe there was in their day, it just doesn't mention it. Or maybe, as we read in the first of Exodus, how it talks about there arose a Pharaoh who did not know Joseph. Maybe by this time, 66 years after the famine had ended, they are already all beginning to forget about who Joseph was. Okay, questions or comments? Just a few applications. We should not avenge ourselves. In Romans 12 and verse 19, God says that he would avenge. Vengeance is his. I will repay, God says. Joseph didn't avenge. We should not avenge. And God's promises come true in their own time, and we've already talked about that considerably. Okay, any other questions or comments about that? It's kind of the end of an era when you get to the end of Genesis. As we've been going through the book of Genesis, we've been talking about individual people and their immediate families. We started off with Adam, right? The first man. And we talked about his third son, at least his third son that I'm aware of, Seth. And then several generations later, Noah, who would have been a descendant of Seth, and Noah's son Shem. Several generations later, we read about Abraham, who would have been a descendant of Shem's, and then Isaac and Jacob. We read about all these people and their immediate families. But then when we get into the book of Exodus, we start reading about the children of Israel. We start reading about Israel. We start talking, seeing where God talks about his armies, and he talks about his people. Yes, we see about individual people again, Moses and David, all these great men of faith. But we see the difference there of how God interacted with certain members of families in Genesis and how it becomes his people in Exodus and beyond. Questions or comments about that? I'm thankful for the elders for the opportunity to teach this class. It's a great learning experience for me. And I'm always thankful to be in a class with Brent because he makes me think, and I need that. And I'm very appreciative of that. And I thank you all for y'all's patience with me and all the help and the encouragement that y'all have given me this quarter. Thank you.